Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
The 1-7 New York Giants against the 2-7 San Francisco 49ers on Monday Night Football. Because that had misery written all over it. Three combined wins, zero combined hope. Ads promoting that game should have come with a warning. And I'm not going to lie. I wanted nothing to do with that game. And if they didn't pay me to watch it, I would not have watched it. Believe me, I would have found something better to do. I would have spent some time with the family. I would have worked a hobby. I would have stared at the wall. Man, anything. Anything except the Giants v. Niners on a Monday night. I mean, the only people who should have been into that game are fantasy players, folks with money on it, and the Oakland Raiders. Because it really felt like the only stakes in that game was the inside track to the number one pick overall. And if you had told me the over-under on that game was 8, I would have taken the under for sure. I would have even given you a final score. Niners 5, Giants 2. So yes, going into that game, I was fully prepared to roll up in here this morning or afternoon and say that the only winners last night were the people who didn't watch and the Oakland Raiders because it moved them one step closer to the first pick overall. I was prepared to do that, but I would have been wrong because I did watch that game. In fact, I watched the entire game start to finish. And right now, I don't hate myself. I don't hate the world. I don't feel like I wasted my time or I lost 3 hours that I'll never get back because that game was so much better than expected. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say New York's 27-23 win was Chiefs-Patriots from earlier this season or Chiefs-Rams from next Monday night. But last night's game was good. The teams aren't good, but the game was good. And even when the game wasn't good, the game was still competitive. Neither team laid down. I mean, they're both pretty horrible, but neither team quit. And let that serve as a memo and a reminder to the Jets and the Raiders and other teams that do seem like they're mailing it in. This is how you handle your business. I mean, there were touchdowns. There were some nice cuts from Saquon Barkley. And there was Nick Mullins. Now, be honest. You're not sure if his name is Nick Mullins or Nate Mullins. But you can be sure of this. Kyle Shanahan is a pretty damn good coach. Shanahan can coach. Oh, and the fact that Mullins played at Brett Favre's high school, old school, I should say, that's quickly becoming the new Jerome Bettis is from Detroit. But again, that's not really the point. The point is Shanahan ripped Nick or Nate from the practice squad and helped turn him into a viable NFL quarterback. The name Nick Mullins was being mentioned in the same breath as Jim Kelly and Fran Tarkenton after his first start. And while he wasn't exactly James or Francis last night, he did come this close to executing a game-winning drive with less than a minute on the clock. So, 2 games into the Nick Mullins experience, the Niners know they've got a legitimate backup to Jimmy G, or they've got a valuable trade chip if they want to move Mullins. Which is why every team that's looking for a head coach is looking for the next Kyle Shanahan or the next Sean McVay. And to all those teams, I say, good luck with that. Because there aren't a lot of those guys around. There aren't a lot of Shanahans or McVays working as assistant coaches right now. And while it's easy to focus entirely on Shanahan, let's not forget about the Giants. They do deserve some credit. I mean, for the entire season, I've done everything I could to forget about the Giants. But they did show up last night. I've got to tip my hat. They flew across the country. They played in some rough conditions because of the wildfires. They could have easily laid down for that game. In fact, it would have been better if they did lay down for that game. Because getting that win gives the Raiders the edge in the battle for the first pick. A pick that they need way worse than they needed that win last night. I mean, that was a nice, cute little win, but they needed the pick. Except they didn't roll over. Eli Manning even put together a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter that actually reminded you of the old Eli Manning instead of how old Eli Manning is. And then he capped it off with this dime to Sterling Shepard for the lead.
Second down and 1 of 3 of San Francisco. He gets the shotgun snap. He looks left. He throws a line drive pass, a leaping two-handed falling down. Catch at the goal line pylon. Touchdown! Touchdown to Shepard! What a catch and what a throw! And the Giants have taken a lead with 53 seconds to go.
That, of course, was Westwood One. As for Shepard, he was asked afterwards what he saw on that play.
Just saw man-to-man coverage, and that's something that we've been practicing for a little while. And I was able to capture the outside edge, and Eli put the ball in the perfect place.
When was the last time anybody said that about Eli? When was the last time the Giants offense actually worked and that everybody seemed to be on the same page? When was the last time anybody in Giants gear seemed happy about anything at all? Now, let's not get crazy with it. I'm not saying they turned this thing around, because they haven't. Nor does that mean that everybody who had been killing Eli Manning for the past year or two was wrong and he shut every last one of them up. They weren't, and he didn't. I mean, pretty much anything negative that's been said about Eli in the past year or two has been true. I mean, the guy really has nothing left. He didn't just win his third Super Bowl. He beat a busted-up, two-win Niners team. And now the Giants are a busted-up, two-win football team themselves. So he's not back. They're not back. But they do have to feel a lot better about themselves going into a bye with a win. And I'll admit it. I will admit this. That game was better than I expected, because what I expected was possibly the worst game of the year and the biggest waste of my time ever. And honestly, it was neither of those things. That was a pretty good game. That was a pretty nice surprise. Email number one reads like this. Mr. Rome, refresh my memory. Yesterday, did you say that Alvin is in Italy with his wife for their anniversary? No! Regards, Lil Alvey's medical insurance provider. Signed, Geoff and Lincoln. War Alvey rolling up on the pharmacy cashier, slamming the pregnancy test on the counter and screaming, "You like that? You like that?" Man, I hope that's not the way that's going. My biggest fear about Alvin, and I did mention it yesterday, Alvin is off this week. The flight deck, James Kelly, is sitting in his chair. It's an impossible act to follow. The reason he's off, he's celebrating his 10th anniversary with Mill, and they're in Italy. Alvey was going to start the week in Rome, end up in Venice, and he's celebrating his 10th anniversary. Of course, my biggest fear, right, is that. My biggest fear is that. I have two kids. It's perfect. Janet would have kept going. She would have gone for a third or fourth or whatever, and I'm like, nah, we're good. Believe me, we're good. Two's perfect. Alvey's got like 12, I think. I lost track. My concern is he's in Italy with Mill on his 10th wedding anniversary, sans kids. Because you're not going to bring 10 or 12 or whatever the number is to Italy. You can't tell me he's not planting that seed again. You can't tell me she's not coming back, not pregnant. And that's great. That's great. Except that a one-week vacation turns into 9 weeks of paternity leave. And my man takes every last one of those days. My man knows the letter of the law and will take every last hour. So that's my concern. I mean, Mill's probably like, I don't know, Alvin. I don't really want to go again. Mill, listen, if we just do this, I mean, sure, we got to raise that kid up for 18 years, but I do get 9 weeks off. Measure one against the other. We got to raise that kid up for 18 years. Maybe 21. But no matter what, I get 9 weeks off. What do you think about that? Okay, let's do this. So I don't know what's going on. I've not heard from him. I've not seen anything on social. Hey, Adam, has he done anything on social? Is he posting right now? Radio silence. Hashtag radio silence from Alvey in Italy. Clones, hit him up. Hit him up. Ask him what's going on. Ask him if he's planting his seed at Alvin DeLauro. Ask him if and when he's coming back. All right, so that's Geoff and Lincoln. That's where that's coming from. Eddie in Santa Paula tweets, there was an NFL game last night. Again, it was not a bad game. I would have missed that game. There's no way that I would have watched that game if they didn't pay me to watch that game. There's so many things I would have rather have done when I looked at that game on paper. Three combined wins, zero combined hope. I would not have watched it. But I have to admit, it was better than I thought. It lives in Falls City. You mean what I watched last night wasn't Dancing with the Losers? Pretty good game. Pretty competitive game. Rome, Eli looked great last night. I think he's got a lot left in the tank. Yours, Kobe dropping 60 on 57 shots in his last game. Aaron in Omaha wore Adrian Martinez for freaking Heisman in 2019. Dude, you honk for that team like nobody honks for any team. I mean, I kind of respect it. Not that part about Kobe. I mean, 60 is 60. I don't care if it took him 90 shots to get it. 60 in an NBA game and walking off on that is something. Today's Daily Jungle is brought to you by Bethesda Game Studio. The award-winning creators of Skyrim and Fallout 4 welcome you now to Fallout 76, the online prequel where every surviving human is a real person, work together or not to survive. Under the threat of nuclear annihilation, you will experience the largest, most dynamic world ever created in the legendary Fallout universe. Reclamation Day 2102, 25 years after the bombs fall, you and your fellow vault dwellers, chosen from the nation's best and brightest, emerge into post-nuclear America. You can play solo, or you can join together as you explore, quest, build, and triumph against the wasteland's greatest threats. Fallout 76 will be available worldwide on Wednesday, November 14th. Pre-order now at participating retailers and play the beta. Games play best on Xbox One. We are joined right now by a Super Bowl winning head coach. Three NFC championships. He led two different franchises to the Super Bowl. He is a member of the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame. Mike Holmgren, A Football Life, premieres Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. The one-hour show features interviews with Holmgren, as well as Joe Montana, Steve Young, Brett Favre, and Matt Hasselbeck. He joins me right now. Mike, nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Very well. Thank you for having me.
Mike, it is so good to talk to you. Listen, you never struck me as somebody who's going to go out and make it about you. So when you were approached about doing A Football Life, what was your reaction?
Well, I kind of chuckled because I wasn't sure they were being serious, you know. But the more we've talked about it and the more they kind of said what they wanted to do with it and involve my family and things like that, it was fun. I mean, the guys did a great job, and I appreciated their hard work.
All right, so that's coming up on Friday night. You know, Mike, there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but let me start right here. You were the quarterback's coach at BYU, and then you applied to be the head coach at the University of Montana. You did not get that job, but after that, somebody reached out to you and said the 49ers were going to need a new quarterback's coach. What happened next?
Well, I kind of told my wife, Kathy, and I said, listen, I got a chance to interview in San Francisco. And she goes, really? And she couldn't believe it. So I said, well, I'm not going to get the job, but I think the experience would be really good to go out and talk to those people. And it was my home. You know, I grew up there, so it was really fun. I interviewed with Coach Walsh and the rest of the coaches there in San Francisco. And then Bill called me in and said, you know, you did fine on the interview, but I have another guy in mind. And so if that doesn't work out, then we might get back to you. And so I said thank you and then went back to BYU. I was out jogging, Jim, and all of a sudden I came back and the secretary goes, Coach Walsh phoned, and I told him you were out jogging. I go, what? You did what? I said, get me where, what? What's the number? So I phoned Bill back, and he offered me the position, and I was really grateful to come back to the city I grew up in.
Mike Holmgren joining us. What a great story. I mean, so you're a few years removed from coaching high school football at that point. So what was it like to go back to the city where you were from to work with Bill Walsh and coach Joe Montana?
Well, you know, it was very, very special. Obviously, I was a little bit nervous or anxious, I guess, because how am I going to coach this greatest quarterback at the time, and what can I do to help him, and how can I make a difference, and all those kind of things ran through my mind. And then Bill set up a time when we could talk. You know, Joe's coming in. Why don't you guys go get a Coke or something and introduce yourself to each other? And he came in, and Joe, we walked down the hallway to the cafeteria or something, and he stops, and he goes, Mike, first thing, he goes, I want you to coach me hard. Coach me. If I make a mistake and I'm not doing what you want me to do, you've got to tell me. And if you think there's a better way or I can do something, tell me. And then this is going to be great. And I said, thank you. And then I was thinking to myself, I didn't say it out loud at the time, but I'm going, wow, here's this MVP. This guy really reached out and made this special for me right away. And then the rest, yeah, he made it great for me. I loved it there.
We're talking to Mike Holmgren. You know, Mike, you look at Joe Montana, and I can remember when Joe played, and I'd interview Joe, and I'd be around Joe, and I'd see the way other Pro Bowlers were when they got around Joe. It's almost like they were in awe of his it. And then when you look at Joe, like much like Wayne Gretzky maybe, Mike, that physically there's nothing really extraordinary about either one of these guys, but they might have been the very best doing it what they did. So how would you define what it was that made Montana so special and so unique?
Well, I think you said it very well, Jim. I think you know you physically you go okay. He's an athlete clearly, but you know, and he had a stronger arm than people gave him credit for. But you know, I think he had a great. First of all, his teammates loved him. That's the very first thing, and they would do anything for him, and that is necessary on a football team. Secondly, he was a great competitor. He'd want to play darts, whatever you were doing, he would try and compete and win and do those types of things. So you needed that. But then he was really gifted as far as accuracy. He may have been the most accurate throwing quarterback I've ever been around. And you know, it paid off for him clearly. But, you know, he was just a competitor. He's a tough guy. He played hurt. I can't say enough good things about him, of course, and his record speaks for itself.
Mike Holmgren joining us. A Football Live premieres Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. Once again, it's a one-hour show featuring interviews with the coach, Joe Montana, Steve Young, Brett Favre, and Matt Hasselbeck. You know, Mike, I've been to Green Bay in the past, and this year I've made a couple of trips to Wisconsin. There really is no place like Green Bay, and there's nothing I would imagine like winning a Super Bowl with the Packers. How would you describe what that community is like, and what was it like for you to live and work there?
Well, for a California kid, you know, going back there, I will, to be honest with you, Jim, it gets cold there.
Yeah, it does.
If you didn't know that,
it does.
A little chilly.
Right.
But going in there, you know, and I remember my first interview with Ron Wolf and waiting in the lobby of the old Lambeau, of the offices there at the old Lambeau Field, and there was a collage and murals, and had Bart Starr and Vince Lombardi and Ray Nitschke and Forrest Gregg and all these guys and all they had accomplished. But that had been like 20 years previous. But still, for a kid growing up and liking football, you knew about those people. And then to have a chance to coach there and be there, that was very special. Now, the people there, the football and the Packers are very, very important to them, and rightfully so. And it's a great community. They're very, very supportive. And I don't think you could ever start another franchise in a community that small again. I don't think it's possible. And they did it, and they've sustained it for a long time, and I think that says a lot right there.
I think you're right. I remember going there for the first time in the mid-90s, and I couldn't believe, I mean, just how charming, how quaint, but just how rabid they were. And even as a California guy myself, Mike, first sports book I ever read was the Green Bay Packer Diary of Jerry Kramer. And yeah. I remember meeting him for the first time. And to this day, he's one of my favorite athletes ever. I remember going into Fuzzy Thurston's bar for the first time and meeting Fuzzy. The whole thing is just so surreal. And then you had a chance to coach Brett Favre. And Brett Favre says that when he looks back on his career, the only regret he has is that he only played 7 years with you and he wished it was longer. So what was it like to coach him, and how would you describe the relationship the two of you had?
Well, it's obviously he's a very, very special person and special player. I got him early in his career, the first, six, 7 years of his career, and early on, I'll be honest with you, you know, people thought we didn't get along because it was a little bit of tough love in there, you know, because he was a little bit of a wild child, but he was so fun to coach, and I really did. He was one of my most favorite guys to coach because he could make me laugh. The teammates loved him. He was a very special guy that way. Early on, you know, I tried to, in the off season, tried to, you know, look at how any quarterback I had could improve their game. How can we be a little bit better next year than we were this last year and things like that. And I remember a conversation I had with Brett because he would do wild things and get us jammed up. You know, I mean, throw a ball off his knees and try something crazy. And I said, let's try and eliminate those types of things, you know. And I think if we just eliminate, cut that down a little bit, we'll be better off. And he goes, Mike, that's just how I play. I play the game that way. And I said, okay. I said, you want to go to the Super Bowl, though, don't you? He goes, oh, absolutely. You know, he goes, okay, I think, you know, we can be 9-7, and we can be 10-6 and get into the playoffs playing the way you're playing right now. I think you're that gifted. But your goals are the same as mine. If we want to go on farther, I think I'm going to ask you to try and do these other things. And to his credit, he said, okay. And he condensed his game down, and he got us to the Super Bowl, and we won one. And I give him a lot of credit for that, because that was going against the grain a little bit for him.
Mike Holmgren, my guest. Mike, before you go, I mean, you obviously played such a role in the lives and careers of some of the greatest quarterbacks in league history. It would be easy just to focus on the quarterbacks. But when you look back on the history of the Green Bay Packers, what did it mean to Green Bay to have Reggie White sign there? How significant was that?
Jim, that was huge. You know, Reggie was a special human being. Great football player, but really a special human being. And, you know, at the time in free agency to try and coax some of the black athletes to come to Green Bay, up and how cold it was, the kids from Florida or Arizona or California, they go, why would I want to go there? Well, Reggie was a goodwill ambassador and really was allowed us to open up the doors, I think, of Green Bay and recruit anybody as a free agent into that place. And aside from being such a great football player, no one ever thought we had a chance to sign him. I mean, quite honestly, in free agency, but we did. And I'll be eternally grateful. I've got a chalk drawing in my office of Reggie that his mom gave me that I'll always cherish. You know, he was a special man to me.
So, Mike, when you watch A Football Life and you hear Joe Montana talk about how much he learned from you, or you hear Brett Favre say that he would not be where he is today without you, you hear Steve Young talk about how he's close to tearing up when he thinks about your impact, Matt Hasselbeck says that you made all the difference. When you see guys of that character and that fiber say those things about you, how does that make you feel, and what's it mean to you?
Well, I think it obviously make me feel great. I think when I got into this business, I really had no intention of being an NFL coach. I was a high school coach and history teacher, and really liked doing that and dealing with kids and hopefully making a difference in their life in a lot of ways. And to be able to do something I love for so long and have those guys, those great players, say nice things about me, I'll get kind of emotional. On the other hand, I haven't seen it, Jim, and I'm a little nervous about it. I hope they don't tell any of the bad stories.
You know? I think you're going to be all right. I think it's going to be fine. Mike Holmgren, A Football Life. It's going to premiere on Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. And once again, that one-hour show does feature sit-downs with the coach, as well as Joe Montana, Steve Young, Brett Favre, and Matt Hasselbeck. Mike, so good to get caught up. Really nice to have you on the show. Thanks very much for that, and I will really look forward to seeing that show on Friday night.
Hey, Jim, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
The Daily Jungle is also repped by Ferguson. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. There's some bad news coming out of Buffalo. Bad news that unfortunately does need to be reported. Nathan Peterman, you are not the quarterback.
Andrew, you are not the fire.
Look, we knew this was coming. Not just because Matt Barkley put on a show last weekend. Not just because Josh Allen is reportedly set to come back after the Bills' bye week. But because Sean McDermott didn't have any other choice. You see, when you love something, you have to set it free. And when you love something, the way Sean McD loves Nathan P, then giving this dude his unconditional release is the only choice left. Now, I know many of you, most of you, pretty much all of you have had your fun with this dude, had your fun at this guy's expense. The crushing Nate Peterman became some sort of sick, twisted sport. Like, picking on the easiest mark in the history of marks is fun for some of you. Why? I have no idea. It says a hell of a lot more about you than it does him. But let me ask you this. In the history of the NFL, has there ever been a quarterback to do it bigger than Nathan Michael Peterman? When you look back on 2017 and 2018, you may not even remember who won or who lost the Super Bowl, but you damn well know Nate Pete. You know you're going to remember Nate Pete. My man was a supernova. Because nobody did it like Nate Pete. This is the guy that the Bills ran Tyrod Taylor out of town for. This is the dude who almost single-handedly created all that drama heading into Week 17 last year when the Mafia needed Andy Dalton to throw Buffalo into the postseason. This is a man who has moved the needle unlike any other quarterback ever. Hell, he didn't move the needle. He was the needle. You want to talk about a debut? Try 5 picks in his debut. 5 picks before halftime.
Peterman rolling and throwing off the hands of DeMarco and intercepted. Patrick DeMarco couldn't hold it. Corey Toomer has it. And down the sideline, he tightropes. Corey Toomer is in for a Charger touchdown. Pass rushers that will come after the rookie, and they do. He floats one, and that's intercepted across the 25-yard line. Pressure coming. Peterman hit, and that is his third interception of the day. Trey Boston has it for a Charger takeaway. Pass is that almost? Did he pick that off? Casey Hayward may have another interception. And that's the fifth interception today thrown by Peterman. Trevor Williams with his first of this game.
Chris Myers, if you need him, Fox Sports. You want a debut? 5 picks. 5 picks before halftime. You want debut? There's your debut. You want late game heroics? Try telling your coaches, quote, I got this. And then throwing a game-winning touchdown pass for the Texans.
Second and 10, Bills from their 25. One back, McCoy. Peterman in the gun. Two receivers left, one to the right side. Peterman takes the snap. He's looking left. He throws that way. It's picked off by Jonathan Joseph across the 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. The Texans go in front on the pick six.
Texans radio, rock and roll. You want an ultimate teammate. When Josh Allen's elbow was jacked up and Derek Anderson's coconut got cracked open, who manned the hell up? Who took the rock? Who balled out to the tune of 188 yards, no touchdowns, and 3 INTs in a 41-9 beatdown? That's freaking right. The big NP. So you go ahead. You go ahead and crack on this dude all you want. I'm not going to, because nobody's done that position. Nobody has done the position of quarterback a bigger solid than Nate Pete. You want to see how hard that gig is? Just throw this dude's name into YouTube. 12 interceptions in 130 career attempts. You're going to feel a hell of a lot better, whoever your team is trotting out there, after like 60 seconds of Peterman. So, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Then, bust out a glow stick and pour one out. While the world's greatest royalty-free techno mix bumps one last time. Pour one out for Nathan P. Be happy you had it. And may your next career go better than your last. It pretty much can't go any worse. It's not his fault. He did what was asked of him. And no, they did not ask him to throw the ball repeatedly to the other team. It's not his fault. They kept running him out there. What was he supposed to do? My man, I got you. Pour one out for Nathan P. 1-800-636-8686. I wish I met him. I wish we had him on. Maybe it's not too late. Nate Pete. Supernova. Got a lot of NBA notes, actually. Another really interesting story. Life comes at you so fast, so fast. Just ask my man, DeMar DeRozan. Now the news breaks as to where he was when he found out he was dealt to San Antonio. And so far, it's worked out well for him. He's also playing great. Except he was on record as saying he wanted to be in Toronto. He wanted to spend his entire career in Toronto. Now we know where he was when he found out about that trade. In the parking lot of Jack in the Box. J-Bo. That story's coming up later on. Right when you think the Raiders can't drop any lower, they do. They do. I've got that to get to. And today is the deadline for Le'Veon Bell. Notice I did not mention that at the very top. Apparently Mike Tomlin still has not heard from him. So if Tomlin has not heard from him, then he's not going to make it in before the deadline. If he doesn't make it in before the deadline, he's Batman. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see Keith Arnold walking that in. If you're listening, you know he's in studio because you heard the Batman drop. If Le'Veon does not beat the deadline, then he's done for the year. And if he's done for the year, he's probably done in Pittsburgh. And it seems to me there are three things at work here. Number one, he forgot who signed his checks. He forgot that it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were not going to blink. Number two, he overplayed his hand. Number three, they're still a Super Bowl contender even without him. Mike D for three tweets. Jim, I was the needle too. Signed Todd Marinovich. I'm not talking about that needle. I'm not talking about the spike. I'm talking about the metaphorical needle. You know, this guy moves the needle. You always hear that. He moves the needle. I'm saying Nate Pete was the needle. Toddy M's got nothing to do with this. Look who's here. Rick in Buffalo. He emailed. He didn't call. Dear Jim, no credit to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott for cutting Peterman loose. It's about friggin' time. It should have been done after week one. Nathan was a great community guy, a man of faith, but even God knew he sucked as a quarterback. Now get Allen back in there so we can see what the kid's got. Rick in Buffalo. P.S. You're a scumbag. Do it before I kick your ass. War the Goo Goo Dolls. War me because I'm awesome. All right, so I added the P.S.s and the wars myself. That email ended with Rick in Buffalo, but he really said that. Damn, I used to say doing the butter knife took a year off my life. Doing Rick in Buffalo takes 5 years off my life. Rick! If you can get free from that job that you do, call the program. Yell at somebody. Threaten somebody. Hype the Goo Goo Dolls. Call somebody an a-hole. In other words, be you, Rick. Just be you. That can't be good for my voice. That just cannot be good for my voice. Especially with another run to New York. I'll show up for the NFL on CBS and Drew Kalisky will be like, Jim, you all right? You feel all right? You don't sound so good. I'm fine, Drew. I got stuck. You know, if you make a face, your parents always say, you're going to get stuck. Don't do it. I did my Rick in Buffalo thing and now I'm stuck. Talk some college football right now. We are joined by a running back for Pitt. In fact, the ACC running back of the week. He had a career high. 235 yards, three touchdowns in Saturday's win over Virginia Tech, more than 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns this season. The sixth player in Pitt history with two 1,000-yard seasons. Pitt is 6-4. They're in first place in the ACC Coastal Division, and they're at Wake Forest on Saturday. Another big game there. Quadri Olsson is my guest. Quadri, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, man. Great. Great to have you on. Listen, you had an absolutely monstrous game on Saturday. I know you're already thinking about this week's game against Wake Forest, but can you take us back to the weekend? You scored in that first quarter, then you had your second TD of the game in the fourth quarter, and then the game got the ball back on its own three-yard line. What were you thinking there before the start of that play? Because it was on that play where you went legend.
You know, it was funny. Before the play, you know, I was talking to Darren, you know, the other running back. And, you know, we were kind of just joking around. Just, you know, I asked him, like, you think I can go 97 yards? And, you know, we kind of just laughed about it. He was like, I don't know, but if you do, like, you'll have the record. You know, and you always, as a kid, or, you know, as any player, you always dream about getting a run that long. You know, so, you know, it was just funny that we kind of talked about it before it happened. You know, he had the previous record of 92 yards. And, you know, I broke his record. You know, he got it last year, and I broke it this year. And it was funny. It was all, you know, it was a good feeling, though. You know, an amazing feeling on senior day. You know, you couldn't really script a better story than that.
Quadri Olson joining us. Darren, of course, is Darren Hall. I mean, for those who had not seen it, and we just played it right now on CBS Sports Network, I mean, you hit that hole, you rip off that 97-yard TD run, and it included a nasty, nasty stiff arm. How good did it feel to stiff arm, to get a stiff arm like that off, and to finish that play, and know that nobody was going to run you down?
You know, it felt good. You know, I had a play earlier in the year, my second game of the season, where it was kind of a, you know, similar situation. I think it might have been like the 4-yard line, but you know, I broke out, ended up getting caught and pushed out of bounds for like a 65-yard run. You know, so when I broke, you know, I told myself I'm not gonna just get pushed out of bounds this time. I'm gonna at least try to, you know, whether it's cut back or run the guy over. But as a running back, you know, it's our job to make a guy miss, to get those extra yards, to run a guy over. You know, to extend plays. And that's something that we always preach here at Pitt, is, you know, being able to extend plays. You know, anybody can run through an open hole. You know, that doesn't make you a good running back. What makes you good is being able to extend plays, make people miss, get those yards after contact. And, you know, and I think we do a good job of that.
Well, you did your job. And one more thought about Darren Hall. You know, from the outside, it seems like the two of you guys trade back and forth who's going to have the dominant game, and you're both incredibly supportive of each other. I mean, it'd be so easy to be so competitive and so caught up in your own situation, but it seems like the better the other one does, the more happy you are. How have the two of you been able to kind of work that out and support each other the way you have?
Just, you know, our motto around here in Pittsburgh is that iron sharpens iron. You know, we make each other better. Competition brings out the best, you know, in the player. You know, that's my brother. I love him to death. And, you know, I know he feels the same about me. And it's good to have, like, friendly competition. You know that, you know, I know and he knows that neither of us can take a day off. You know, we can't take a day off in practice, you know, take a day off in a game or anything like that, because, you know, we're just as equally as good, you know, as one another. And, you know, especially, you know, it's all competition and practice. When we get to the game, you know, we're one big family. You know, we support each other. He supports me. I support him. And that's how it's been for 4 years. You know, it was like that my redshirt freshman year. He was a true freshman playing. And, you know, we've gotten really close over the last 4 years that I've known him. And, you know, he'll be a friend of mine, a brother of mine for the rest of my life.
It's tremendous. You talk about family. Aaron Donald was hyping you on Twitter Saturday. What's it mean to get that kind of love from a player and a Pitt legend like him?
That was huge. Getting a tweet from AD, you know, and AD doesn't tweet a lot.
Right?
You go down his Twitter, he doesn't tweet a lot. So, you know, to get that recognition from him, you know, I see him, you know, when he's here training in the off season pretty much every day. So we talk a little bit. But definitely for him to go out of his way, go out of his time, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, you know, Pro Bowler, Defensive Player of the Year. To get that recognition from him, man, is definitely huge. It's definitely an honor. And, you know, I was surprised when I saw it, man. Just excited, though.
Hey, listen, one more member of that family, too. James Conner was fired up on Twitter. You responded that he was the one who set the standard. How would you describe the standard that James set, and how do you go about matching that or trying to match that?
Well, you know, when I came here and I was a freshman and I redshirted my freshman year, you know, James set a high standard, you know, for really my class, you know, his sophomore year, 1,800-yard ACC Player of the Year. You know, and he just really just kept the standard going that was set by guys that came before him. So what I mean by he set the standard for me, for Darren, and, you know, and it's our job to set the standard for other guys to come. But, you know, just the standard of being a Pitt running back, what that means, you know, is really just being physical, being blue collar, being tough, you know, and you've seen it. And running backs that have been here in the past, whether it was James or Tony Dorsett or Ironhead Hayward, you know, Shady McCoy, I can go on and on all day. You know, he really set a foundation. He really set the standard for running backs of the future, for, you know, people like myself. And, you know, it's hard. You know, I look up to James. You know, he's a role model of mine, you know, even though we're around the same age, but he's still a role model of mine. And I'm happy that I have him as a friend. you know, somebody I can call and talk to any day.
You know, there have been so many great running backs, and you mentioned them. I'm really glad you mentioned Ironhead Hayward. He was one of my favorites. God, I used to love having him on this show and
Definitely.
Watching him play. I'm so glad you mentioned him. Listen, you've got a couple of games left in the regular season, and your career is not over, but when you leave Heinz Field for the last time and you look back at your time at Pitt, what kind of thoughts do you think you'll have?
You know, definitely my last game at Heinz, you know, being the performance that we had as a team, you know, not only with my run, but, you know, rushing for 494 yards, you know, in a game, you know, the most, I think, in Heinz Field. You know, just everything we did as a team, you know, just winning that game and really just setting us up, you know, one step closer to really getting our goals. But you definitely got to think of, like, the big wins, you know, that came in Heinz Field, you know, with this one. And then, you know, last year against Miami, you know, beating Penn State a few years ago. You know, I think those are the memories that will last with me for a lifetime.
And then a final thought, you don't just share the love with your offensive linemen. You do it also on Instagram as well. What's a hog check, and why is that something you like to do?
It's you know, our O-line calls themselves the Hogs, and, you know, the running backs, you know, we call ourselves the Stable. You know, Darren has a nickname, Stallion. You know, it's just, you know, Hogs, they're the ones that, you know, they do the dirty work. You know, they get dirty. You know, they're in the trenches. You know, they don't get all the credit, but they're in there, you know, doing the dirty work so we can, you know, we can look good, you know, so the horses can look good, you know, so, you know, you got to give those guys all the credit that they deserve, and they deserve that credit. George, you know, Aston is a part of that, you know, he's in our room, but, you know, he's a part of that, but you got to give them the credit that they deserve, because they deserve, you know, more than they get. You know, they don't get to score touchdowns, they don't get to, you know, do all those kind of things. So, you know, the credit that they get is all the credit that they deserve.
Well, hearing that and having this conversation, pretty easy to see why you guys are where you are right now. 6-4, first place in the ACC Coastal Division. That is your ACC Running Back of the Week, a career-high 235 yards and 3 touchdowns. Next up, Pitt is at Wake Forest on Saturday. Quadri Olison, my guest. Quadri, great to have you on. Really great conversation. Nice to have you, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You're a good dude. Have a great day.
Appreciate you.
Life comes at you really fast. Ask my man, DeMar DeRozan. He was blindsided by life back in mid-July when the Raptors dealt him to San Antonio for Kawhi Leonard. That's not DeMar's response. That was not his reaction. In fact, DeMar made it pretty obvious. He made no secret of the fact he was not happy about that. DeMar was the guy that wanted to spend his entire career in Toronto. So hard to blame him for being unhappy. The face of a franchise for nearly a decade. How do you expect him to be anything other than bent when he loved that town? He loved his situation. He wanted to be there for his entire career. So getting that news is bad. But how he received that news and where he received that news is even worse. Now we find out the juiciest details of the entire trade. Because according to a column written by Jonathan Abrams, a Bleacher Report, DeMar was back here in Southern California, in his hometown of L.A., getting his grub on after watching the new Denzel movie, Equalizer 2. Now, let me be straight. And in no way am I throwing any shade or disrespecting a legend like Denzel. I'm not doing that. But did anybody even know there was an Equalizer 1?
Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you did. You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk.
Jay! I need my money!
I get it, man. I really do. You need your money. I need my money. We all need our money. I'm just not stepping in front of that. I just didn't know that you were working some Equalizer franchise. I didn't know that franchise existed. I mean, usually sequels are chasing some smash hit. They're never any good, but at least they're chasing a smash hit. I'm just saying that the next person that I run into, not named DeMar DeRozan, who even knew there was an Equalizer 1, is going to be the first. But that's neither here nor there. That's not what this take is about. DeMar saw the movie, and then he went to crush some grub after the movie. And let's just say my man keeps it real. He did not go to Nobu's. He didn't hit up Mastro's. He didn't hit up Spago. He didn't go to Javier's. Nah, none of that. My dude hit the Bose. J-Bose, to be specific. This is straight from the column. Quote, upon leaving the movie theater in Los Angeles late into the night, he checked his phone. I was wondering why I was getting missed calls, he says. He was hungry, so he went to get something to eat at a Jack in the Box. In the parking lot, he got a call telling him he had just been traded to San Antonio. It caught me off guard, he says. I stayed in the Jack in the Box parking lot for like 2 hours, just trying to process it all. That's how I found out. Midnight, sitting in the Jack in the Box parking lot for about 2 hours until I went home. End of quote. Now, somewhere right now, I'm sure Bag Affleck is smiling hearing that story. Because if anybody knows that real life happens at a Jack in the Box, it's a guy who sent his nanny and ex-wife in to grab him a sack of J-Bos on his way to rehab a few months back. So shout out to DeMar for enduring the kind of news that literally leaves you frozen in a Jack in the Box parking lot for 2 hours. Not exactly the place that you want to post up for more than 5 minutes, especially past midnight in L.A., driving the kind of whip that I'm sure that he was driving. Now, the good news for DeMar is that J-Bo's is a 24/7 drive-through. So it's very possible that in those 2 hours that he could have gotten hungry again, maybe wanted to hit it with some comfort food, could have rolled through for round two. Let's face it, that chocolate lava cake is the perfect taco chaser, or so I'm told. I mean, imagine being so emotionally floored that you're stuck in a Jack in the Box parking lot for 2 hours. This, I mean, is a compliment. This is what the Raptors meant to this guy. This is how much he loved Toronto. This is how badly he wanted to be there. Now, there is a silver lining to the entire thing. DeMar is currently bawling out of his mind. So far with the Spurs, he's averaging career highs in shooting percentage, rebounds, and assists. Why is that? Better organization, better situation, I don't know. Maybe both, maybe neither. Or maybe it's because there are no Jack-in-the-Box locations in all of Canada, but there's freaking 46 in San Antonio alone. Coincidence? Coinky dink? I don't think so. The Bag, Affleck, got clean after he inhaled an entire J-Bo franchise. He looks great now. DeMar is playing his best basketball with Jack on nearly every corner in San Antone. So the question for all of you trying to better yourselves, who's next up in the drive-through line? I'm glad those deets leaked. It's an amazing story. I always wonder where DeMar was when he found out. Devastating news like that. He was at Jack in the Box after watching The Equalizer 2. Jamie in Green Bay, first one through. He tweets, Jim, wasn't diarrhea Equalizer 1?
Diarrhea is the great equalizer.
Drew in West LA, man, that just continues to come back to bite me, doesn't it? Wasn't diarrhea Equalizer 1? Hey, listen, at first I denied it because I'd forgotten. Honestly, I've done this so many times for so long and had, I mean, come on, hundreds of thousands of takes, hundreds of thousands of rants. Even I can't remember everything I've said over the past 30 years. Case in point, that diarrhea is the great equalizer. But upon being shown that, I not only own that, I stand by that. It is. It was true then, it's true now. 1-800-636-8686. Fabian, you never know what you're going to get from Fabian. Let's find out. Los Angeles, Fabian. Fabian, what's up?
Romy, what's up with that dude, Quadre Addison, man? Doug Doug says, you know, even way more than I do. What's up with that man? You know.
That's not a good call.
No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that.
All right, so now we have a fake silk.
Not a very good call.
And a fake silk. And a fake Fabian. That was not Fabian. I knew right away that was not Fabian. That dude was way too lucid to be Fabian. There was no way that was Fabian. It's just some guy calling up pretending to be Fabian going, you know. Is that where we are right now? We've gotten to the point where nobody's going to call with their own original take. They're just going to call up and pretend to be other callers. How long before I get a fake Matt in LA? The fake Fabian. We had the false Wanka back in the day. Fake silk. Fake silk. And now fake Fabian. Anybody else I'm forgetting? We are going to talk some Saints football. I am efforting, radio and TV term, Alex Anzalone. He's having a big year. They're having a big year. In the meantime, as I'm efforting him, I'm looking at my call screen right here. So that was kind of weird, right? We had a fake Fabian. The fake Fabian. The only thing more bizarre than the fake Fabian is the real Fabian who was listening when the fake Fabian called. And now he's freaking out. So we may or may not get to that because I found my guest, a linebacker for the Saints, coming off a game where he had 5 tackles and a sack in that beatdown of the Bengals, 51-14. On the season, 29 tackles, 1 interception, 2 forced fumbles, played his college ball at Florida. He was the 76th pick overall in 2017. The Saints are 8-1. They're first in the NFC South, and they're hosting Philadelphia on Sunday. Critical matchup. Alex Anzalone is my guest. Alex, good to have you on. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Really good. Nice to visit with you. Hey, take me back to Sunday, if you don't mind. Third quarter in particular, you come flying in on a blitz. You get to Andy Dalton. What did you see on that play, and how good did it feel to get home?
You know, it was one of those plays where if you see it on film, I pretty much come unblocked. But, you know, my goal was to keep tight to the D lineman as he was going through the A gap, and I was just able to come free. And, you know, the last second you see – you're about to hit home, and then you finally do, and it feels really good.
Right, so you made a lot of plays of late. Your performance on Sunday continued to run, for instance, of 3 games where you had a forced fumble, an interception, and a sack. You've been making huge plays. Does it feel like something has changed for you, like the game is slowing down, or maybe is it something else?
Not necessarily. I think that, you know, just being placed in the opportunity to make those plays. You know, obviously the interception, I kind of made that play on my own, but you know, so even the forced fumble and maybe the sack per se, but I think that just being in the right place at the right time is what those plays come down to, and you know, let your athletic ability take over.
And then overall, you've won 8 straight games since the opening loss this season, and that's a run that included a statement win over the Rams. So how would you describe the confidence that the team has right now in the way you guys are playing?
You know, we have a lot of confidence right now. I think that, you know, obviously, like you said, the 8-game win streak is big. And, you know, we just take it week in, week out, even though it sounds cliche, but we really do. I think that, you know, Coach Payton does a good job of getting our mindset on each week as its own week. And no other week is more important than the next. So with that mindset, that's how we've had this continued success throughout the year.
Alex Anzalone joining us. You mentioned your coach. Before the game, the fire alarm was going off in the stadium, and then after a while, Sean Payton smashed it himself to get it to stop. Did you see that, and if so, what did you make of that?
No, I didn't get a chance to see it. I saw the picture, the aftermath.
Right.
But, no, I didn't see. I heard about it, but I didn't see anything.
All right, so he's as good as it gets when it comes to head coaches. What's it like to play for him?
It's big time, you know. You know, obviously, when I got drafted to the Saints, I was excited to be coached by him, and you know, obviously, you know, all the success he's had in the past, and you know, he's a guy that is obviously offensive minded, and playing defense, it's a little different. But even so, going against the offense in training camp and in practice throughout the year, you're able to learn a whole ton just by what the offense is trying to do to attack a defense and everything like that. So you know, and obviously his leadership style is really, really good, you know, with the leaders we have in our locker room and how he allows the players to do some leading and then how he allows, you know, things to go on in the locker room. It's really good.
Alex Anzalone of the Saints joining us. When you talk about leaders in that locker room, obviously one of the guys who comes to mind is Drew Brees. What's he like as a teammate and a leader?
You know, he's a really good guy. That's number one. You think I noticed that right away when I first got here. He's a guy that's relatable, even though I forget how old I was when he first got in the league, but I know I was in first or second grade, something crazy like that. So obviously there's the age difference for a rookie like I was last year, even a second or third year player. But you know, he's a guy that's a great leader. He's well spoken. He's a great football player, obviously, and you know, someone that has the respect of everyone in the locker room.
All right, so speaking of first grade, you know, put that aside for a minute. What about like sixth or seventh grade? Story goes that when you were like 12, you wrote a note that read, "I'm going to play in the NFL." And then when you were drafted, your mother gave you that note in a frame. First off, do you remember writing that note in the first place?
Yeah, I do, actually. I remember, you know, it's something that I did. I read a couple books about, you know, the power of the spoken word or written word in that case. And you know, it's something I wanted to do, and yeah, it was really special. My mom gave that to me on draft day.
Hey, listen, I think we all write things down. We all have goals. We all want things to happen, but that came true. The power of the spoken word manifested itself. So what's it like to play in the NFL knowing that you kept that promise to yourself?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, obviously a lot of people helped me get to where I'm at today, but, you know, the promise I kept to myself was big time. I think that it really proved to me that, you know, you can really do anything you put your mind to, and you know, it's like I said, a lot of the stuff sounds cliche, but it's so true. Like, if I would have never believed that, then this probably wouldn't have happened. And you know, it's very powerful, and you know, I'm just glad I'm able to, you know, talk about it today.
Well, it's also not without adversity either. For example, when you were a rookie, you suffered a shoulder injury early in the season, and it seems to me at that point it'd be pretty easy to get frustrated, maybe check out mentally, but you'd show up every single day, you'd do all the rehab, you'd go to the meetings, you'd work out afterwards. I mean, obviously you were frustrated where you were not in a position to contribute, but how important was it to stay that involved with the team, and then what did you learn going through that?
Yeah, it was big time just staying involved. One, just for your own, you know, personal state, mental state, that, you know, you're not checked out or depressed or anything like that, because getting injured sucks. And, you know, again, football taken away from you sucks. But, you know, it was big time. Just as a learning curve for myself, I think that I learned a ton. And as a rookie, I thought I knew a whole lot. You know, I knew the plays and everything and what to do. But, you know, as I continued throughout the season, I learned how to game plan, learned how, you know, what calls are good against different offenses and everything like that. And then just continue watching film and learning from the guys that are playing. There's something to be said about getting mental reps, even if you're not in the game. So, you know, it just definitely helped me progress to where I'm at today.
I like that, getting mental reps even when you're not playing. Listen, along your journey to the NFL, you played your high school football at Wyomissing, making you, along with Ross Tucker, who is a good friend of the program, one of the legends of Spartan football. What do you remember about your days as a Spartan?
You know, obviously I grew up in Wyomissing, Pennsylvania, born and raised, you know, so it was cool. It was a small town. I grew up with the same guys throughout my whole childhood, and then eventually senior year we won state championship. But, yeah, I remember Ross since I was a little guy. I remember he had a camp at our high school when I was young, and, you know, I remember attending that, and, you know, all the signed gloves and everything at the youth football raffles and all that. So, yeah, he's a close friend of mine. You know, we talk pretty frequently.
That's really cool. Listen, you and your fiance Lindsay have been involved with the Animal Rescue of New Orleans. How did you first get involved, and then what's that organization mean to you guys?
Yeah, you know, so I got linked up with them through another organization through the Senior Bowl. And, you know, it was something I'm passionate about, something my fiance is passionate about. And, you know, we got linked up with Animal Rescue of New Orleans, and sometimes we've volunteered there before and helped, you know, take pictures with them and all that type of stuff. And I know last year when it was snowing in New Orleans, surprisingly, you know, they were short on blankets, and because the washer and dryers were full, so we went to the laundromat, got some a bunch of their blankets to do some laundry for them. So it was just cool to help out. You know, it's for a good cause and everything like that. So
it's an awesome cause. New Orleans 8-1. They're first in the NFC South, and they're at home against Philadelphia. Alex Anzalone, my guest. Alex, I appreciate you and you taking time today. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
Have a great day. Love that. They're having an amazing year. And that's a good cause. We have a rescue cat. We've got two cats. We have Cody, who's not a rescue cat. And we have Sapphire, who is a rescue cat. And when we lost our cat, we wanted to get another cat. And we couldn't decide between... We only wanted one cat. And then we saw these two cats. You know, Cody, the bad attitude, high price cat. And Sapphire, the super shy rescue cat, who was free. So we decided to get them both. And they both act this. They act who they are. They are what they are. Sapphire acts like the greatest cat ever, the coolest cat ever, the nicest cat ever, the most affectionate cat ever, the most appreciative cat ever, because he was a rescue cat. Cody, on the other hand, costs a hell of a lot of money and seems to know it for some reason. How he knows that, I don't know. But the cat looks right through me. Man, he treats me like garbage. I love this cat. I'll say it for the record. I'm not ashamed to say it. Cody the cat is cool. That ragdoll, he is the coolest cat I know. But man, what a bad attitude. Looks right through me. He looks at me like, yeah, what are you going to do about that, old man? Yeah, that's what I thought. Feed me. Feed me, bitch. Cody, come on, man. Don't be like that. Feed me or I'll eat more plastic and puke all over your house. All right. Take it easy. Cody the ragdoll. All right, so I mentioned that the only thing more bizarre than Fabian, than a fake Fabian calling, is the real Fabian listening when it happened. And he's here right now. Really quickly, some guy pretending to be Fabian called this show and did this. Fabian. Fabian, what's up?
Romy, what's up with that dude, Quadri Addison, man? Doggy Dog says... You know, even way more than I do. What's up with that man? You know.
That was so much funnier the second time I heard that. He's dropping in a doggy dog, and you know. I got to know what the real Fabian thought when he heard the fake Fabian. Let's go there right now. Fabian, what's up, man?
Man, what's cracking? Is the connection all right? Or
you sound good. Yeah, you're good.
All right. So I'm driving around, bro, right? And, you know, I hear, like, let's go to Fabian, you know, night trip. I'm like, what? And I thought you were going to joke around with, you know, one of my old calls or something, you know? And then I hear this. I don't know what to call that individual. And anyways, dude, I mean, at least you didn't hear my FBI mic impression. You know, that wasn't that bad, you know? At least, you know, kind of sounded like him. But this other cat, he didn't sound like me, bro. And I don't know. I was telling Adam, like, yeah, it's easy to get, it's easy to get you, you know?
Good job, Fabian. Now, Fabian, that's like the best you've ever sounded. That's the best you've ever sounded. He just said, come on, man. Like when I did FBI Mike, I at least sounded like him, but this cat didn't sound like me at all. Let's put that out there to the clones. He sort of sounded like you. Now I knew right away it was not him or you, Fabian, but this is the guy pretending to be Fabian.
Romy, what's up with that dude, Quadri Addison, man? Dog says... You know, even way more than I do. What's up with that man? You know.
Good night now!